Sometimes, the best stories in golf aren't found on tour. You'll find them at the back of the range. And here's your host, Ben Adelberg.
And welcome to the back of the range. I am your host, Ben Adelberg. This is episode 340. Hope everyone is having a good week. As promised, another podcast episode for you to enjoy this week. More are on the way, so hope that you enjoy them while conference championships are wrapping up and teams are preparing for regionals. My guest on this episode is Jacob Modleski, who is finishing up an impressive freshman season at Notre Dame. He picked up a win this spring at the Johnny O Collegiate at Sea Island, but his big breakout was in January when he won the Jones Cup. Winning that tournament has opened all kinds of doors for Jacob, and I'm sure that I'll be seeing quite a bit of him this summer at some of the biggest tournaments in amateur golf. Now, funny story about this episode that wasn't mentioned during the conversation that I had with Jacob. The episode was recorded at a Hampton Inn in Savannah, Georgia. Now, I wasn't staying at this hotel. It was just a convenient stop on my drive up to Augusta for the Augusta National Women's Amateur and the Masters. I literally stopped at the hotel. I went to the front desk and explained, yeah, I have this business call I have to jump on. I mean, technically that's what it was. And hey, you know, can I just use your business center for an hour or so? So, that's how this episode was recorded. My friends at Hilton came through in the clutch as always. So yeah, this was a first for me. Hampton Inn serving as the satellite podcast studio of the back of the range. That being said, this was a great conversation with Jacob. A lot of great takeaways in this episode that you can incorporate into your own game. Jacob got into the Jones Cup as an alternate, and he made the most of the opportunity. Let's jump into this episode right away. Jacob, you're at the back of the range. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me on.
You're most welcome. So this is the part of the episode where I kind of jump in and kind of intro the guest, but we're going to do something a little bit different. Transparency here for people listening. I've done 300 and some odd episodes, but this is exactly what happened a few days ago. I thought Jacob and I were going to record an episode on a Thursday night, and it was in my calendar as Wednesday, and I completely screwed that up. And Jacob calls me at about 8:30, like, hey man, are we doing this thing? So apologies to you, and also transparency to the listeners that yes, even after 330 some odd episodes, yeah, I can screw things up every once in a while. So sorry about that, but these things happen.
All good. We're just grateful to be here.
Well, that was my embarrassing moment of late. It comes full circle. So why don't we just start off with a fun one? What is your most embarrassing moment on the golf course in recent history?
Oh, man. Most embarrassing moment on the golf course.
See, you can't trust me for a second. I threw myself on the sword basically just for an excuse to get that answer out of you. See, there's a method. There's a whole method here.
To be honest with you, it might be the first tee shot. You witnessed it. It might be the first tee shot at the Johnny O. It was really just a bad golf swing, but never ideal to put one out of play on the first tee.
That's not good.
But no, it's not good. But tell you what, bounced back, made bogey, and from there ended up playing pretty well.
Yeah, normally winning a tournament would be a good definition of playing pretty well, picking up a first collegiate win at Johnny O. You were a co-medalist. I know that, and we're going all different directions here, but I know for there are many reasons in college golf why there are no playoffs, because you could have, you know, your team, maybe Notre Dame's got to catch a flight, and you're tied with a guy from, you know, Wisconsin, and they don't have to catch. I mean, there's just a lot of things. Everyone's got places to go and flights and got to hop in the car. So that's kind of the reason there's no playoffs really in college golf. Does it make any difference to you, or is co-medalist just the same as medalist?
I mean, obviously you're always, you know, you're always looking to win out, right?
Sure.
But like you said, you know, in that case, it's just really hard in collegiate golf to always plan on playoffs or be able to, you know, make it work with people's schedules. I think a win's a win. I think finishing first one way or the other is, if you're not going to be able to settle it via playoff, I'd say a win's a win, yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things with college golf, like, you know, 36, 18 days and shotgun starts, and it's just part of the culture.
For sure, yeah.
Noblesville, Indiana. That is where you get your start. You're playing junior golf there, high school. I mean, talk to me about growing up in Noblesville.
I mean, it's really nothing fancy. You know, I grew up, I went to Catholic school. I went to Catholic high school. Played a lot of my golf in the public courses in the area. I definitely know the public courses well. Met a lot of really great people through my home course, Pebble Brook, some other courses in the area. And it's just a great community. I can't tell you how many times, you know, been fortunate enough to, you know, show up to a club and, you know, find somebody I know or meet somebody that, you know, knows a high school teammate. It's a really tight knit community, both on and off the golf course.
And I'm guessing, you know, not to generalize and make those assumptions, but I kind of grew up playing at public courses. I'd get out at a private course every once in a while down here in South Florida, but most of the time it was, you know, beg, borrow, and stealing for range balls. You know, I'd pick the range or do things just to kind of get, you know, access, and, you know, someone sneak you out or you join a group. And were there a good cast of characters, like, you know, older guys that kind of took you under their wing to kind of help you learn not just how to, you know, play, but also kind of learn the culture of golf?
I wouldn't necessarily say learning the culture of golf, but there definitely was a cast of characters between some of the guys I was able to meet growing up. You know, it's some of the guys, whether it be letting me out after school, play nine holes, or, you know, I'd play through a group on the golf course, maybe play one or two holes with them. I got to meet a lot of really cool people growing up in Noblesville, for sure.
So you had a lot of success as a junior golfer, you know, state champion, all conference. I mean, checking all the boxes, and did a little digging here, figured out that you won the Fred A. Kiesling Mental Attitude Award. I've never heard of anything like this, but it's great. Can you talk about this award? And maybe, I mean, we're going to talk about a little bit of mental toughness because of what you did at the Jones Cup, but can you explain what that award meant and how you won it?
Yeah. So basically it's an award for leadership and excellence, you know, on the golf course, but not so much golf related, kind of in how you act and how you play golf that doesn't involve actually swinging the club. And it's actually quite an honor, in Indiana high school athletics. It means a lot because it's recognized from other coaches, and, you know, to win that award, obviously I came up just short of the individual state championship my senior year. But to win that award meant, I would say, almost an equal amount. Just because, you know, there's only one person that can win it every year, and you know, just to be recognized by my peers and coaches as a leader, it always means a lot.
And I'm just making sure I'm familiar with this. This is not just a golf award. I think it's one,
correct.
So one person in Indiana high school athletics for the year, one on the boys' side, one on the girls' side. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, that's across everything.
Yes.
They gave it to a golfer instead of like a basketball player. That's incredible.
Well, sorry. Well, they give it to one per sport.
One per sport. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's still, I mean, of all the high school golf teams in the entire state.
Correct.
Yeah. There you go. So it's kind of like almost kind of a sportsmanship award as well. Is it kind of just by listening to you, it kind of goes along that line as well, I think?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's sportsmanship, integrity, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So Indiana, we're talking about, you know, obviously everyone thinks of basketball, or they think of football, or, you know, how did you get into golf in Indiana, which we all know maybe the weather is not as forgivable as it is in South Florida?
Yeah, it's not quite. I'd say I definitely got my start from my brother. My grandpa would always take my brother and I out, you know, whenever we'd visit, and I got to watch him play golf. He's 4 years older than me. I got to watch him play golf a lot growing up, whether it was through, you know, high school or even when we were younger. You know, I was maybe 4 or 5 and he was 9 or 10, and I was always looking up to him. But I never really got into golf, I would say, at a competitive level, really up until maybe I was 12 or 13. And even then I was playing other sports. Golf was never my main sport. It wasn't until I was maybe 14 or 15 that I really decided that, I could potentially have a future in golf.
We're going to talk a lot about how you were able to navigate your way through the Jones Cup in January, winning that tournament as a as an alternate. There's a whole great story about that. But, you know, staying patient, mental toughness, we're going to hit upon those topics as well. But I think I may have uncovered where you get a little bit of your mental toughness. What did your dad do for a living before he was a motivational speaker?
He was in the Air Force for 20 years.
Okay. You can elaborate. You can brag on your dad. It's okay. I'm just, you can either I say it or you say it. You can go ahead.
I'll say it. So he flew F-16s and A-10s, and then he was on the Thunderbirds.
Your dad is Maverick, right?
Yeah, it's a bit, more or less, yeah.
Okay, so actually, what was your dad's call sign?
Mods. Call sign was Mods.
All right. Mods. Okay. I mean, I get it. I was just, you know, it's not, there's no real story there. It's just shortening the last name, right?
It is, yeah. There's, fortunately for him, yes.
Okay, so it could have been something else.
Correct, yeah. It's, call signs can go a variety of different directions, but his was pretty straightforward.
Okay. But like when your dad is flying F-16s, I'm assuming you're learning maybe just indirectly or possibly directly. You're learning kind of lessons as you're growing up playing athletics because, I mean, for someone to pass along how to stay calm under pressure, I mean, there's nothing bigger than that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate. My dad coached a lot of my teams growing up.
Okay.
He was definitely played a big role in, you know, how I developed as a player, whether it was in football or golf, and between, you know, watching my brother firsthand and being taught by my dad, I definitely learned from a young age, you know, just sort of the basics of mental toughness, I'd say. And, you know, from there, golf kind of teaches you a lot as well, just because it's such a unique sport.
So his kind of like the way he's, like you mentioned, he's coaching you in football or baseball, basketball. When you must see like other dads, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, but if you see like, I'm just thinking of like that, like the crazy parents that are like yelling at their kids and you do better and this and that. And then I'm assuming his approach would be completely different, being calm and trying to get the most out of you instead of going the different direction. So you're probably learning things just, like I said, kind of through osmosis almost, that's just preparing you for years down the road.
For sure. I'd definitely say there's a mix of both.
Okay.
He's definitely a very intense coach. We were actually a really good football team in grade school. And obviously nobody looks at grade school football very closely in terms of results, but
I don't have those stats in front of me, Jacob.
I was going to say you might've looked, but you probably didn't find them.
I didn't.
It was growing up playing those sports, you know, learning what it means to be a teammate, learning what it means to do your job. You know, he had a lot of little sayings that have stuck with me over the years. And whether you're saying them very intensely or we're talking in the car,
sure,
they held the same level of importance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be great lessons that you're probably thinking. I would imagine you're just kind of thinking back to like, yeah, I know what my dad would say. I remember hearing that at 11 or 12.
So. Yeah. For sure.
You're like, yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
You go to your freshman at Notre Dame, really one of the iconic schools for athletics, for academics. I mean, it's right up in there in that pantheon of schools that just, whether you follow sports or not, you know Notre Dame football, you know Stanford basketball, you know Auburn, and, you know, football. I mean, it jumps right out. When did you start getting recruited by Coach Handergan at Notre Dame? When did that start to become a reality of that's where you're going to play your college golf?
I started being recruited. It was actually first by Coach Zedrick. I think it was July, like second week of July of 2021. And then I talked to Coach Handergan for the first time a couple weeks later. And I'd say by the middle of August of 2021 or maybe late August, I was pretty interested in the school.
And, you know, I've been around, as you know, I'm around a lot of college golf. I'm around a lot of players and a lot of coaches, not just to steal snacks out of the golf cart. I mean, I actually talk to the coaches and there's different cultures that I can kind of see. Like there are teams that, okay, that team I think appears at least on the outside, like a little looser. There's a little more joking around. There's other teams where man, they're working. What is it about the culture that Coach Handrigan, Coach Zedrick were kind of talking to you about that wasn't ultimately a good fit for you? Because you need to make sure that you kind of have to know that it's going to mesh when you walk on campus.
Yeah, I think it's really tough trying to see how it's going to mesh when you walk on campus. But Coach Hanner and Coach Z in the recruiting process, you know, it's you get to go on visits to a lot of schools and you get to meet a lot of guys on the team. But it was pretty clear to me, you know, I played a round with Palmer and Owen, and I got to talk to some of the guys, and it was pretty clear that they had a pretty special bond. You know, obviously you only go to one dinner and you might sit with them at a football game, but it was clear that they saw the golf team as more than just a golf team. And that's really important, you know, for the overall culture of a team. If all you're there for is just to play golf, it's going to be hard to like connect and develop. And I think as I've, you know, come on as a freshman, I've seen it grow even stronger than it was in the past. And I think the group of guys we have now is the strongest team I've ever been a part of, on and off the golf course. And it helps us, you know, it helps us play well, but it also helps us when we don't play well. You know, we're all there for one another, and it's just been a really cool team to be a part of.
Well, we've talked we've hit upon the fact that you've already picked up a win. You won at Johnny O this spring, but you know, back in the fall, you're just kind of getting started with classes and figuring out where to go and getting acclimated to the practice schedule and trying to qualify. What was maybe the biggest challenge for you this fall?
I think it's probably the biggest challenge anyone has when they go to college, but it's probably just having so much time that you have to figure out what to do with yourself. I mean, it's pretty easy in high school. You know, you've got 7 or 8 hours a day that you have to be in one spot, and you kind of go where you have to go, and someone's there to tell you you're wrong if you're wrong. But you know, in college, you just have to be very aware of your time, and especially at a school like Notre Dame, we miss a lot of class, and they don't take to us missing class very lightly. So you got to communicate well with your professors, and it's just so much more freedom, and you just got to be ready to, you know, have that freedom and make sure you know what you're going to do with it.
Do you have professors that are golfers?
I had one guy say that 125 would be a good day for him. So I don't, I don't know if that really counts or doesn't count, but he's a super nice professor. I like him a lot, but he was like, yeah, 125, 130 would be a good day for me. I was like, oh, well, I don't really know.
That's when you tell him, like, hey, if I make 75 on this test, that's a good day for me. Now maybe you don't.
yeah, that's right. We'll flip our scores.
Fall, I mean, gosh, it's not like almost any other college golfer in the country. You cap off the fall by going to St. Andrews. I mean, you're an incoming freshman. You get to do that, and I think your fourth or fifth tournament that you've ever played at Notre Dame. This is the St. Andrews Collegiate. It was Vanderbilt, Notre Dame, North Carolina, and Georgetown. Both the men's and the women's squad get to go over. It's televised on Golf Channel. What sticks out about that trip? I mean, obviously the golf is one thing, but just the bonding with the teammates and also the ladies team and just families. What sticks out about that?
Yeah, I think a couple things stand out, and they're definitely different. Firstly, you know, the golf stands out, like you mentioned, but getting to play the old course is pretty sweet no matter what. It's such a hard course to get onto just with, you know, the lottery and everything. And we got there the first day and the weather was so bad that every course was closed in Scotland, more or less,
right,
except for the old course. And, you know, we walked up and we were able to get like 8 or 10 of us on. I think I shot like 87. And felt like I played pretty well. But those kind of things stuck out, right? You know, the Scotland experience, the golf. And then I'd say a second thing that stuck out was like you said, the bonding. We had a chance, you know, we could kind of explore St. Andrews a little bit. We had some free time where we could, you know, go to different restaurants or kind of see what the town was about. And we're very close with the women's team, you know, things like that, bus rides, all that sort of stuff. It's just things that, you know, quite honestly are once in a lifetime experiences. I don't know how many times we'll be able to get to Scotland, and I certainly probably won't be going with a, you know, a group of 20 or so people that I'm close with again anytime soon.
You mentioned being over there with the women's team. I'm familiar with that team. That's a lot of time with Chloe Schiavone, isn't it?
It is, but I don't think you could have too much time with Chloe.
It's hard to get her to come out of her shell and talk, isn't it? I mean, she's so reserved and quiet. Just to get her to finally open up and let people in, it takes a lot, doesn't it?
It takes a lot. Yeah. Yeah. That's one way to put it.
Yeah. We're being incredibly sarcastic. One of the stars of that team who, yes, that's, you know, that golf tournament was televised on Golf Channel. She could probably just carry her own show on the Golf Channel.
Yeah. She was tipping her hat, taking a bow on the 18th green.
Oh God.
It's, it's a you lot. Say it's like a bad thing.
No, it's great. It's just a lot. I think we need more of that in college golf.
For sure.
Absolute miserable weather over there. I was watching it the comfort of my my home in my recliner because I'm old, and it was fun to watch. Who on the team had the most difficulty with the weather?
That's a good question. Quite honestly, I'd say we split it pretty evenly. I think the first round we all got absolutely smoked. And then after that, honestly, the final round, it was played on the old course, same thing, and conditions weren't great. I thought we all handled it pretty well. Everyone after the round was talking about some pretty cool shots they hit, and they just required you to be really, really creative. Things you just really don't see in the States very often.
Unfortunately, your first two rounds were at the Jubilee course. I've played the Jubilee. I've played the old. The Jubilee might be the hardest course of St. Andrews Links.
Yeah, we, like you mentioned, the weather was pretty poor on the old course, but it actually was fairly good on the Jubilee course. We got some sunshine, and at one point I think Angelo was down to just pants and a golf shirt when it was about 52 degrees. So the weather was mild.
It can get challenging over there. The weather was slightly better at the Jones Cup. Let's talk about this incredible win that you have there. You go down as this is basically the story of Rudy. You go down there as an alternate. First of all, you played the South Beach Invitational, finished 89th. Sorry for bringing that up, but just got to kind of tell the story and frame it up. So you finish 89th at South Beach, you missed the cut. What prompted you to decide to go to Ocean Forest at Sea Island, knowing that you weren't in the field, that you were an alternate?
Well, I mean, I knew where I was on the alternate list, and I was also aware that not one person had dropped out at that point. And from what I had heard, that, you know, there's normally 3 to 4 people a year that aren't able to make it to that tournament. And I figured, you know, at worst case, I'd be able to go down and play some golf in some warmer weather. But I really had a pretty good feeling that I'd had the chance to play, and it all ended up coming together.
Did someone not show? But I think it was Brett Roberts. Did you get his spot when he pulled out due to injury?
I think so. Okay. It might have been his spot. It might have been somebody else. But okay. I think there ended up being a couple people drop out. It wasn't just one.
Okay, I know Shipley dropped out halfway through because he was sick, so you didn't get his. But yeah, I think it's either Brett Roberts. I want to say Cannon Clakeham, but I might be wrong there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Doesn't matter. Your name's on that trophy. Now, you get in as an alternate. I'm just thinking from where I would be, or maybe someone else would be, if you get in as an alternate, you may think to yourself, well, I'm playing with house money. I got nothing to lose. Wasn't even supposed to be here. Wasn't even in the field. So whatever happens, happens. Did you have that mentality, or did you try to immediately switch into, I'm here just like everyone else? Like, how did you manage that? Because it can go one of two ways.
I honestly think I'd say I combined them both. I knew that I didn't have anything to prove against anybody. I wasn't going out there trying to show off or show that I could, you know, compete with some of those guys. But at the same time, you know, everyone's starting even par, and I felt like my game was in a really good spot. My practice rounds went well, and the course fit my eye pretty well. So I knew if I played well, you know, I'd be able to compete at the same level as any of those guys.
Now, you're playing with the best amateurs in the world. This is really kind of the marquee tournament of you know, has a really unique spot on the calendar. It's in January, so, you know, nobody's in school. There's no other, really any other tournaments. And this is it. There's a tour exemption on the line. I mean, everyone's really there. There's a lot of Walker Cuppers there, all Americans. And you're a freshman in Notre Dame. So this is a great lesson for just anyone listening, whether they're, you know, they get paired up with like the club champion, or, you know, they're playing against the state high school champion, or, you know, whatever. But like, how did you manage just kind of being around these names that are kind of, you know, everyone knows these names in the world of amateur golf?
I mean, well, I've had the opportunity to play against them before. You know, I think back to the USAM last year. Obviously, I played well in stroke play, and you know, I won my first match, and unfortunately, I lost in the round of 32. But that was kind of the first time where I had ever, you know, shown myself that I could compete against the best amateurs in the world. And I'd say I kind of thought back to that, and at the same time, you know, I just had a really good game plan, really good process going into the Jones Cup. Had a great caddy. My caddy Brent Keller was fantastic. He kept me grounded well all week, and we just played it one shot at a time.
So basically the solution that almost always works, just kind of play boring golf.
Yeah. And you know, at Ocean Forest, it really can't be boring all the time, unfortunately, just because of, you know, the design of the golf course and some of those spots around the greens. You know, you miss a shot by 3 or 4 yards and all of a sudden you got a 25 yard pitch up a hill. But I tried to play as boring golf as I could and just focus on playing aggressive to, you know, to the correct targets.
You know, Jones Cup, you win this tournament, you're the only one that finished under par. You finish at one under par. Typically when the weather is the way it is, it's not a birdie fest. You had 11 birdies during the tournament. Really, that's kind of at the top of the list. I think Caleb Surratt had 15, but that was powered by an exceptional final round. Is there a certain style that kind of fits you? Are you more the methodical, par's a good score, or, you know, do you like the birdie fest kind of golf that you're kind of going to see in college golf from time to time? Is there a version that fits you better?
I think when I make, you know, one or two birdies, I tend to just keep making birdies. It's a very good characteristic to have, but at the same time, you know, you're always looking to try to get it started. And at the Jones Cup, it was just really hard to make a bunch of birdies, even over a 4 or 5 hole stretch. But I knew looking at the pin sheet for the final round, I was looking at some of where the flags were, and I knew if I was in the right spots in the fairway, I'd have looks at birdie on starting on hole 8 all the way through, you know, 16 or 17. And I just kind of got it going at the right time. I hit a lot of good tee shots and a lot of good wedges and just relied on the putter and made a lot of putts. And I think maybe half of those birdies came in that last 12 hole stretch.
You're probably not the right person to ask, because you were kind of focused on the golf and maybe not as focused on the player dining aspect of the Jones Cup. But in your experience, how much does Jones Cup stand out as far as from a player experience perspective with maybe other amateur tournaments you've played in?
I think it's at the top of the list. I don't know how many places have surf and turf as player dining for one of the meals. I can confidently say I haven't had it anywhere else. But it was really cool. The tee guests were great. We had podcasts set up on ends of the range.
Yeah. That worked out pretty good.
All sorts of stuff. There were tour vans, and it was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, that's we're gonna do that again next year. I think that's I think we're gonna continue doing that. And yeah, tour vans at an amateur event in January. It's it's just the absolute perfect way to kick off the year for amateur golf.
For sure.
Yeah. Let's try and get a little publicity for some of the lesser known players on the Notre Dame team. Of course, we're talking about the fashion icon Palmer Jackson, 2022 Jones Cup Invitational champion. I mean, he's a teammate. He's a former champion. As you're entering that final round, even after you sign your card and you're hanging out with him on the range, it's got to be nice to be able to lean on him and ask him questions about Jones Cup. Did he provide you any insight, maybe during the practice round when you're still kind of waiting to see if you're going to get in the field? But I'm sure you're picking his brain a lot that week.
He did. And, you know, he always tells me I talk too much, and, you know, that's okay. But I certainly lived up to that expectation. The practice round, I probably asked him about a billion questions about everything from greens to the bunkers. And the best part was he hadn't seen the course yet. So it had been redone. So he really, you know, he knew a lot about the slopes and things like that. But it was kind of cool to be able to pick his brain and at the same time learn a couple things with him, you know, him explaining the differences in the holes, the differences in collection areas, even the differences in the grass. Obviously I hadn't been overseeded, and you know, for me that's just kind of how I knew it. But for a lot of the guys who had played it before, it was a pretty big difference. And I'd say I definitely had an advantage being able to, you know, talk with him in the practice round and pick his brain a little bit.
So you're like the kid brother that he thought he was going to get a break from over the holidays, but then just showed up.
Yes, correct. Never stops talking.
That's so great. You sign your card. You're in. You birdie 17 in the final round. Make a 6-footer for par on 18. You're in at 1-under. You're sitting there waiting. I remember looking over. Actually, went and hung with you guys a little bit. It's you. It's Palmer. It's David Ford. Basically, the two previous Jones Cup champions and the soon to be current Jones Cup champion, and you're standing on the range. Was there ever a moment there where you're kind of like, is this really happening right now? Like, what are you kind of thinking about at that point? Because it's not done yet, but you're like, I kind of feel like I'm hanging with the champions right now, and I'm not really the champion yet.
To be honest, I was just trying really hard to stay focused on practicing, just because I really didn't know what was going on too much, and I wanted to be ready in the event of a playoff. But looking back on it, it was really cool. You know, obviously David was hitting some balls and Palmer's just kind of standing there. We're all talking a little bit, and you know, it was just a really cool moment. Like you said, I had no idea that I'd end up winning the tournament. I had a good inclination, but had no for sure idea. But both those guys were super supportive. I played with David the final round, and you know, Palmer took a video of me making my putt on 18 and David somewhere in the background fist pumping, and it was just cool. I mean, both those guys were extremely supportive, and it was pretty clear in the way they talked to me that they were just proud of me and happy to be there.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun at David Ford's expense whenever possible, but I will say he is one of the most genuine people I see. When people beat him or people are winning in front of him, he's always like that, applauding, smiling. I have this really great picture of him and Ben James when Ben James beat him at the USAM at Cherry Hills last year. And you would think that David won. I mean, it's just really, really cool how he's just so happy for people. So that's not a surprise, but really great to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I just thought of? In a mixed team event down the line, How noisy and potentially distracting for their playing partners would a David Ford Chloe Schiavone pairing be?
I'd just be scared for whoever had to play them. I don't like if someone was. I certainly wouldn't want to, or if I did, I'd try to get as many people as I could to cheer for me because I know there'd certainly be a large crowd out there for them.
Imagine them mic'd up. I mean, who's going to edit all that? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've got a lot of really cool pictures from Jones Cup, but I think one of my favorites is after you win, it's a photo of you and Palmer and Jim Stahl. And, you know, Jim Stahl, for people who don't know, I mean, it's called the Jones Cup and it's named after Bill Jones, but Jim Stahl is a co-founder of that tournament, played for Notre Dame in the late 50s. He went on to win a U.S. senior amateur. When you're standing there for that picture, and of course, after the moment you're posing and interviews and all that stuff, but did it at least kind of hit you what that picture was all about?
It did for sure. You know, being at Notre Dame and, you know, Mr. Stahl, you know, it definitely played a role, in just like the whole tournament experience. Obviously I knew Palmer won a couple years ago. I had the opportunity to meet Mr. Stahl when I first got down there. And it, you know, being able to say that Notre Dame golf has won two of the last three Jones Cups is something that no school has ever been able to do. And in that moment, it definitely hit me a little bit that, you know, as a program, as a school, it meant a lot more than maybe it did for as a win for me.
This win is going to open up a lot of doors for you as far as like your summer schedule. I mean, your Wagger went from like I think I just looked it up, so it's including your win at the Johnny O. But your Wagger, I think, went from 404 in January, and now you're inside the top 100. I think you're 93 at this point. So this opens up a lot of doors for you. Have you thought about what you're doing this summer?
I have, yeah. Fortunately, with the Jones Cup, I'll be able to play in the USAM, and from the Western Junior last year, I'll be able to play in the Western. So those two really back to back are two of the bigger, AM events in the world. So I'm really looking forward to those two. Great venues, great tournaments, and then on top of that, I'll be able to play in some of the Elite AM series and some of the bigger events that I previously haven't been able to get into. Essentially, I'll just be able to play against some of these top players that I was fortunate enough to play against at the USAM or the Jones Cup. I'll just be able to play against them on a little more consistent basis.
Yeah, those are two big ones. Then obviously you have don't forget, you're going to play in a PGA Tour event this fall.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, Palmer actually first told me about that. I truly had no idea. I mean, I guess I had an idea when when I followed that Palmer won the Jones Cup a couple of years ago, but he said something to me on that same tee box when I was with Palmer and David about playing the RSM. It was kind of news to me for the first time, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around it a little bit.
Yeah, because you're not thinking about stuff like that. You're like, okay, I won the Jones Cup. This is great. And you're getting asked questions, and then, yeah, you're not thinking about that stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, I got to go make a debut on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have plenty of time to think about your RSM. You have obviously the end of this collegiate season. Notre Dame is getting ready for the ACCs, and then on to regionals and nationals. So plenty to think about. So I'm going to let you get out of here with just one final thing. We're going to tie something from the beginning of the episode to the end. I had mentioned that your dad was a fighter pilot, flew with the Thunderbirds, F-16s. You know I can't let go of this. So you said his call sign was Mods. So let's have a little fun. First thing that pops into your head, what would Coach Handrigan's call sign be?
Coach Handrigan.
We're going to give you a few here. So let's start with Coach Handrigan, his call sign. And by the way, take as long as you want, because I'll edit out the gaps. So, just take your time.
This is a tough question.
I know. Listen, you could do other podcasts if you want to, but this is the real thing, man. I mean,
I don't think I've ever called. I mean, I don't even know how many times I've ever said Coach Henry. I think normally I just call him Coach.
Okay.
But I mean, you can't, I feel like you can't just say Coach is a call sign, but.
All right, we're going to let you move on. I'm going to get you. Let me throw some easier ones at you. Okay, let's throw an easy one at you. Angelo Marcone.
Blondie.
Lauren Boudreau.
Probably top five machine.
Okay. We'll just shorten that to machine. I love it. Perfect.
Machine, yeah. Machine's good.
Rocco Salvitti.
Oh, man. I can go a variety of directions with this one.
Sounds good.
I'm just going to go with Rock. Just Rock. R-O-C.
Okay. Chloe Schiavone. This has got to be an easy one. Come on.
I mean, I feel bad just saying nicknames, but most of the girls just call her Chloe.
Okay. I was going to say, I was just say Hyper. Instead of Viper, just Hyper. But, either
way. Yeah.
Last one. Palmer Jackson.
Big Palm. Gotta be Big Palm. That's courtesy of Christopher Bagnell, the South African.
Yes, Big Palm.
Big Palm.
Jacob, congrats on a really great win. Great story. I mean, you really rarely hear about alternates pulling off wins, and you won it in one of the biggest amateur tournaments of the year. So congrats on that. Great story. We'll be following you as the postseason approaches. And appreciate you stopping by the back of the range.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
And there you have it. Special thanks to Jacob Modleski for joining me on this episode here at the Back of the Range. Don't forget, follow along on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Every single episode is available at thebackoftherange.com. We'll see you next time here at the Back of the Range.